Gina McPhee is a 27-year-old prima gravida with an uncomplicated prenatal course who came to the hospital yesterday afternoon with nausea, vomiting, swelling of her face and hands, and a sense that something wasn't right. She's at 28 and 0/7 weeks gestational age, confirmed by first trimester ultrasound. Her prenatal course has been uneventful. On arrival, her blood pressure was elevated to 200 over 120. She had visible periorbital edema and swelling of her hands and feet with 2+ pitting edema. Her reflexes were brisk with 1 beat of Clonus. Her urine had 3+ protein. Electronic fetal monitoring showed a normal reactive fetus without decelerations and no contractions. Based on this preliminary evaluation, she was diagnosed with severe preeclampsia. She received magnesium sulfate and intravenous hydralazine with her blood pressure falling to 146 over 96. While 28 weeks gestation is a little earlier than what we usually see for preeclampsia, it's not rare for it to occur at this gestational age or even earlier. The presence of persistent hypertension and significant proteinuria is the basis for the diagnosis of preeclampsia. The other two findings of edema and increased reflexes, while part of the classical description of preeclampsia, are not essential for the diagnosis. Her preeclampsia can be categorized as severe at this point based on the severity of the hypertension, greater than 160 over 110, although her subsequent laboratory tests will show additional evidence that confirms the severity of the disease. We weren't finished with our evaluation of her, but because of the very high and dangerous blood pressure and increased reflexes, we immediately loaded her with mag sulfate and also gave intravenous hydralazine. The magnesium sulfate was primarily to protect her against seizures, but it is true that magnesium sulfate also has some antihypertensive effects. In addition, we gave hydralazine to lower her blood pressure out of the dangerous range. Our intention was to lower the BP to approximately 140 over 90 and not to drop it to 110 over 70. An important physiologic aspect of preeclampsia is peripheral vasospasm, which requires a certain amount of hypertension in order to continue to perfuse the tissues. Returning her to a normal blood pressure can jeopardize this perfusion. It was important to evaluate the fetus. Some patients with severe preeclampsia will have compromised their fetus due to lack of satisfactory blood flow to the placenta, infarcts, or abruptions. Further, even though the fetus was in good condition in this particular case, as soon as we start lowering her blood pressure, the uterine perfusion may drop enough to create a fetal threat, thus the importance of continuing to monitor the fetus carefully. Her initial laboratory tests were consistent with severe preeclampsia. Her liver enzymes SGOT and SGPT were mildly elevated due to the swelling of the liver and microvascular spasm, with significant reduction in downstream perfusion. Her hemoglobin was 14.3, reflecting the intravascular fluid depletion and hemoconcentration that normally accompanies preeclampsia. Her platelets were normal at 220, although drop in platelets commonly accompanies preeclampsia. We scanned her abdomen to check fetal presentation, it was cephalic, amniotic fluid volume, it was normal, although preeclampsia can be found with both polyhydramnios and oligohydramnios, and fetal anatomy. In this case, everything was normal. We next considered ultimate disposition. The only definitive treatment for preeclampsia is delivery. In this particular case, with the severity of the illness, it was important to take the necessary steps to get her delivered. However, because of her gestational age, early delivery poses a significant risk for the fetus. We compromised. We started betamethasone to stimulate fetal pulmonary maturity. Betamethasone has its maximum beneficial effects after 48 hours, so if delivery could be safely postponed that long, the fetus would benefit. Further, if delivery could be postponed for a number of weeks, the fetus would be in even better condition, but this patient was sick enough with her preeclampsia that we believed it very unlikely we'd be able to safely postpone delivery for a few weeks. Her cervix was long, thick, and closed, unfavorable for induction. While we could have opted for cesarean section, we chose a different approach. We started some intravaginal misoprostol to ripen the cervix for about 12 hours and then started Pitocin to induce labor. While some people have expressed some theoretical concerns about potential adverse effects of the misoprostol on the maternal blood pressure, no evidence has confirmed that concern, and misoprostol is widely used in cases of severe preeclampsia for cervical ripening. The larger concern with misoprostol, although not in this patient, is the increased risk of uterine rupture seen among women at term with previous cesarean sections who are now undergoing an induction of labor. Most obstetricians will avoid use of misoprostol in such women. So long as the baby remains healthy, as evidenced by a normal fetal monitor tracing, and the mother remains stable, sick, but not worsening, then by the time we actually get her delivered, we'll be approximately at 48 hours after initiating the betamethasone.